You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book, The Purpose Effect, Building Meaning in Yourself, Your Role, and Your Organization by Dan Pontefract. Last show, we were looking at this chapter, Not on Purpose, and subsection, Remuneration. If there was one sublime piece of advice I received from under the tutelage of Lorna Shapiro, Associate Dean at the British Columbia Institute of Technology during the late 1960s, it was this, quote, "There are three things people hate being messed around with, parking spots, offices, and pay," unquote. As I have witnessed over the years, the last one is fundamental. The Easterlin paradox, named for Richard Easterlin's argument in a 1974 essay, taught us that increasing levels of pay over time does not equate to increased levels of happiness. It is not possible to buy one's way to the purpose effect. For example, United States gross national product per capita has grown 300% since 1960, yet average engagement in America has remained the same. That is, Americans have more money to spend on average, yet their level of contentment has flatlined. While we all want to be appropriately compensated, pay raises alone are not going to curb this workplace malady anytime soon. Reporting the outcome of a Princeton University study for the Center of Health and Well-Being, Daniel Kahneman and Angus Deaton observed that emotional well-being can rise to a certain level in relation to earnings, but there is no further progress beyond an annual income of $75,000. In response to the study, Dan Price, founder and CEO of Gravity Payments, determined to put theory into action in early 2015 by announcing to the 120-person organization that over a three-year period, those making below the threshold would have their salary bumped up to $70,000. Dan signaled his intentions to be true to his company's motto, quote, "Take care of your employees and they'll take care of your customers," unquote. Some have challenged his motive, but Dan is adamant to stay the course. When I asked him why he thought this good deed was necessary, he said, quote, "As a leader, there's a moral imperative to do the best you can for those you're leading. Setting a living minimum wage allows people to unleash their passion, continue to push the boundaries of service, and further our mission to make credit card processing fair for independent businesses." Dan believes Gravity team members are the most passionate people he knows. As such, he wanted to ensure all of them became adequately compensated. Tellingly, Dan indicated that team members at the company are willing to cancel Friday night dates to help a merchant in need, working for a purpose, not profit. Dan thinks the new $70,000 minimum wage will provide the team with the resources to live a happier life without financial distraction or worry. It helps turn their job into an extension of their values, he said, rather than a place they go to make ends meet. Another factor that might help accentuate a lack of purpose is the widening gap in pay between senior-level executives and the average worker. According to the Nonpartisan Economic Policy Institute, between the years 1978 and 2014, CEO pay in the United States increased by approximately 1,000%. The wages of non-executive workers, on the other hand, have only increased by 10%. It makes infinite sense that there ought to be a gap in wages between the CEO and the average worker's salary, but should it be 300 times, as was the case at the end of 2014? In 1965, the compensation ratio between a CEO and the average salary was 20 to 1. Even Peter Drucker, writing in the Wall Street Journal in 1977, observed that a 25 to 1 ratio should be the target difference. It is near impossible, however, for team members not to read the business section of a newspaper or website or watch any mainstream media news footage and wonder why executives earn so much money in comparison to their own wages. Stock options and stock awards are certainly a factor in private or publicly traded companies. But even public sector firms can be forced to take action around pay issues for the betterment of its goals and mission. One such company is BC Ferries, an arm's-length Crown corporation, a firm that is established and regulated by a provincial government providing ferry services across the multitude of routes in British Columbia. Its CEO's annual compensation was $915,000 in 2012, but after public and worker backlash when the figure was released, the firm's board lowered it to $500,730 in 2014. But I will suggest further that innovation, apathy in the organization becomes a pervasive problem because of such disparity. Who wants to innovate when top-level brass becomes the sole group that is compensated for growth? Perhaps this is why closed-minded behavior and idea hoarding characterize many disengaged organizations. If objectives are set for the individual as opposed to the team, it becomes a competitive quest to outdo your peer rather than working together for an overreaching benefit, the stakeholders that everyone ought to be serving. In the book Flat Army, I explored the meaning of the term collaboration. Quote, as so many words do, the word collaborate originates from Latin, in this case from collaborare, which means, quote, to work with, unquote, the prefix col meaning with, and of course, labore is familiar to us as to work, or in today's lexicon, to labor. Thus, to collaborate is to work with, unquote. Imagine a team where members work to improve their collaboration skills instead of their competition skills, working with one another to establish goals and achieve outcomes. Instead, though our workers are plagued both with the preoccupation of more pay as well as the compete versus collaborate mindset. A lack of purpose stems not only from gaps in pay or fixations on increased amounts of remuneration, but also on the consumerism mindset that has enveloped many parts of the Western world. On the topic of pay and consumerism, economist John Maynard Keynes wrote in 1930, quote, Now, it is true that the needs of human beings may seem to be insatisfiable, but they fall into two classes. Those needs which are absolute in the sense that we feel them whenever we, the situation of our fellow human beings may be, and those which are relative in the sense that we feel them only if the their satisfaction lifts us above, makes us feel superior to our fellows. This money-induced consumerism mindset is a form of keeping up with the Joneses. As author Richard Layard remarked, people are concerned about their relative income and not simply about its absolute level. They want to keep up with the Joneses or, if possible, outdo them. The International Monetary Fund found as households accumulate more debt, the deeper the subsequent slump the economy can take. Furthermore, as they studied the Great Recession, the economic meltdown that occurred between 2008 and 2012, they found housing busts preceded by larger run-ups in gross household debt, mortgages, personal loans, and credit card debt are associated with significantly larger contractions in economic activity. We might argue that the pursuit of possessions has clouded some people from reaching a personal sense of purpose. Author Charles Handy chimed in on the subject, stating, quote, "Maybe consumerism is the cancer of today's society," unquote. Maybe it is. Consider consumer debt. In the United States, each adult now possesses approximately 3.7 credit cards and is responsible for over $15,000 of consumer debt. The total credit card debt in the United States alone stands at $2.43 trillion. In 1989, combined credit card debt sat at roughly $211 billion. Put it differently, credit card debt rose by $2.2 trillion in only 20 years. It is even worse in Canada, where each adult is responsible for over $27,000 in consumer debt. What about the UK? Total credit card debt in the UK has increased by £2.5 billion since 2001 and shows no sign of slowing. Not surprisingly, personal savings rates likewise have decreased in the United States from 12% in 1982 to just under 1%, while household debt as a percentage of GDP has risen from just over 45% to 80% over the past 50 years. Similar levels can be found in other Western countries. In the United Kingdom, household debt as a percentage of GDP currently sits at 98%. In Singapore, it sits at 77%, and in South Korea, it is 88%. The problem, therefore, is not an isolated one to America. It could be that Scottish economist Adam Smith was far more prescient than scholars and economists give him credit for in his 1776 Treatise, The Wealth of Nations. On the topic of useful production versus empty consumption, he wrote, quote, "Consumption is the sole end and purpose of all production, and the interest of the producer ought to be attended to only so far as it may be necessary for promoting that of the consumer." The maxim is so perfectly self-evident that it would be absurd to attempt to prove it. To put things into perspective with the purpose effect, let me recall a coaching exchange I once experienced with a colleague. We had met several times over the previous year discussing his career and future possibilities. On this particular day, sensing the chance for being far more direct, I asked a rather blunt question, quote, "Are you interested in a progressive role, one with purpose, or are you simply looking to make more money?" Unquote. The reply was illuminating. Quote, "I've got to pay off my credit card debts, and then I need to buy a house. We want to start a family, and we need a second car. Can you help me? I need to make more money, and I need to do it fast." Unquote. This particular individual was not so much interested in a role with purpose or working in an organization that demonstrated purpose across its stakeholders as he was desperately seeking an increased amount of money from a paycheck to fuel his lifestyle desires. In summary, money, widening compensation gaps, and the relationship to increased consumerism, as well as household debt, are likely contributors to misaligned purpose. At a minimum, everyone should be aware of these types of indicators.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you're listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
Every year, countless people succumb to the temptation to purchase exotic animals like hedgehogs, lizards, monkeys, even tigers and bears to keep as pets. But life in captivity is often a death sentence for these animals who may suffer from malnutrition, an improper environment, and the stress of confinement. For more information on this issue, visit the BCSPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book, The Purpose Effect, Building Meaning in Yourself, Your Role, and Your Organization by Dan Pontefract. The next section we're looking at is profit. Charles Handy stated, quote, "The principal purpose of a company is not to make a profit, full stop. It is to make a profit in order to continue to do things or make things, and to do so even better and more abundantly," unquote. There may be some deep-rooted issues in today's private organizations concerning the relationship between purpose and profit. Although this not-on-purpose issue is primarily focused on the private organization, rest assured there are facets that can be applied to the public sector and the not-for-profit organizations as well. Theodore Roosevelt is someone that can still learn, we can learn still some stuff from today, particularly as it relates to a firm's fixation on profit for the sake of profit. Roosevelt was president of the United States between 1901 and 1909, serving America as its 26th commander-in-chief. At the turn of the 20th century, as America was beginning to usurp the United Kingdom as the dominant superpower, society was well on its way to shifting from agrarian to manufacturing modes of economic prosperity. Leaders such as Roosevelt possessed a keen sense of the future. Roosevelt clearly described in his State of the Union speech of 1902 the potential for a bifurcation of profit from purpose, due in part to the large gap in citizen wealth that had manifested over the previous 30 years. Quoting Theodore Roosevelt right now, quote, "Our aim is not to do away with corporations. On the contrary, these big aggregations are inevitable development of modern industrialism, and the effort to destroy them would be futile unless accompanied in ways that we could work the utmost mischief to the entire body politic. We can do nothing of good in the way of regulating and supervising these corporations until we fix clearly in our minds that we are not attacking the corporations, but endeavoring to do away with any evil in them. We are not hostile to them. We are merely determined that they shall be handled as to subserve the public good. We draw the line against misconduct, not against generating wealth," unquote. Roosevelt recognized that the corporation was here to stay, but that it required both guidance and good governance if it were to achieve profit and purpose for the good of stakeholders. Roosevelt argued that corporations were, in fact, creatures of the state and could therefore be forced to serve a more purposeful intent for the public. The previous 30 years or so had clearly created a divisive wedge in society between the haves and the have-nots. Roosevelt, clearly onto something, was providing us with a clue. Perhaps the misconduct witnessed by some of today's corporations, putting profit, greed, and power ahead of purpose, and not on relative equal terms, comes from a lack of better processes, guidelines, and laws. Professor of Law at the University of British Columbia, Joel Bakan, seems to think so. In his book and subsequent documentary, The Corporation, The Pathological Pursuit of Profit and Power in 2003, Joel explained, quote, "For in a world where anything or anyone can be owned, manipulated, and exploited for profit, everything and everyone will eventually be," unquote. I read the book many years ago and watched the documentary, so I figured it was time to directly reach out to him to see if his thoughts might have changed more than a decade since the corporation debuted in print and film formats. I suppose I wanted to see if he was continuing to channel his inner Roosevelt. According to Joel, things have not changed all that much in society or inside the corporation. When I met him over a coffee and asked if corporations were beginning to demonstrate different or improved behaviors than what he put forward when he wrote The Corporation, he said, quote, "Despite the very clear and encouraging changes we see in corporate consciousness over the last decade, including new practices and expectations, the corporation itself as an institution has remained relatively the same," unquote. Joel believes the doctrine known as the best interests of the corporation principle remains firmly entrenched in the corporation. This principle is a legally binding agreement of managers, directors, and owners of the company to continue prioritizing financial interests above all other decisions and concerns. He contends it is a deeply rooted principle and has been at the core of the corporation's success over several decades in raising investment capital and thus fueling job creation and innovation. All good things, he states. But there remains a problem, and it is not the people, rather the institution of the corporation itself. As he says, quote, "The best interests of the corporation principle effectively bars leaders from pursuing the best interests of society," he said. For Joel, the corporation remained fixated on greed and profit. As is evident from the financial crisis of 2008 onwards and the continued devotion to both maximizing shareholder value and extracting profits from a company in order to game the system, he believes, the corporation needs to entrench sustainability into core business plans, and that the corporation of the future will recognize that sustainability is not enough, and that more is needed. That more, he refers to, are public laws and regulations that demand, incentivize sustainability, rather than hoping and trusting corporations to embrace it voluntarily. But why do things remain the same? Milton Friedman, noted economist and statistician, wrote in 1962, quote, "There is only one and only one social responsibility of business, to use its resources and engage in activities designed to increase its profits," unquote. Over a period of time, this doctrine has become the principal habit of most corporate leaders in the Western world, evidenced by his role as advisor to Ronald Reagan during the presidency in the 1980s. It has become the way to run a business, particularly after an article of his was published in the New York Times magazine in 1970, titled, quote, The social responsibility of business is to increase its profits, unquote. Arguably, this became the launch point for today's profit and greed-focused missions. The most telling passage of his essay in the magazine reads as follows, and I'm quoting, "In a free enterprise, private property system, a corporate executive is an employee of the owners of the business. He has direct responsibility to his employees. That responsibility is to conduct the business in accordance with their desires, which generally will be to make as much money as possible while conforming to the basic rules of the society, both those embodied in law and those embodied in ethical custom," unquote. Friedman's opposition to the concept of egalitarianism at the time, a byproduct concept of socialism and welfareism theories, was unfortunate. The social economic benefits of an engaged and flourishing organization are arguably irrefutable. Maybe Friedman missed his chance to place purpose on the same pedestal as profit. Perhaps he overlooked the opportunity to redefine capitalism, one that included social, community, intellectual, environmental, and societal well-being along with the financial. Since Friedman's article appeared in 1970, the results have been arguably devastating for society in general, particularly if society sticks with the current definitions of organizational success. It can affect the public sector, too. The U.S. government shutdown in early October 2013, where roughly 800,000 federal employees became furloughed for an indefinite period of time, and another 1.3 million employees had to show up for work but didn't know if they were going to get paid, is an example of leaders in the public sector forgetting about society's well-being in favor of partisan politicking, and arguably for their own profit. Recall Janice Williams, who was struggling with the difference between her personal self and team members she was displaying while working in a government ministry that did not know how to unleash her role purpose, let alone how to profit from it. In a 2005 paper entitled, "Has Financial Development Made the World Riskier?", former economic counselor and director of research at the International Monetary Fund, Raghuram Rajan, chillingly foresaw the financial collapse that would follow 3 years later. He wrote, quote, "If firms today are implicitly selling various kinds of default insurance to goose up returns, what happens if catastrophe strikes? Will they start defaulting on obligations to policyholders and pensioners precisely when such protection is most urgently needed?" Rajan was spot on. And in subsequent shows, we're going to look at how the financial meltdown occurred in 2008 and some of the people who had responsibility for it. And then we're going to be looking at purpose mismatch in the corporation and how it can be reduced or eliminated. So please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.